Hi guys, it's Kara, host of Everyone's Business But Mine. And let's be real, one thing that makes the show possible is by selling sponsorships to advertisers. One way you can support us in getting more sponsors is by telling us a little bit more about yourself. You can do that by filling out a quick survey at the link in the show description. Plus, your answers are anonymous. They'll help us learn what you love most about the show and how to make it even better. The questions will ask you about the things that help advertisers understand the audience. It'll only take a few minutes, and it's an easy way to help the show. So you can find the link in the show description. Thank you so much, and stay tuned for the rest of the show.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
I don't believe you guys were ever in love. I think it was a fest for 6 months.
Dude, we would sit there for 5 hours.
You would
talk.
Get horny, extra horny, because you weren't getting
Ariana.
You
have
no idea
what you're talking about. I would literally go over to her house and we would spend like 5-6 hours together. If we had sex, it would be like for a little bit. We would talk the whole
you're
time.
You're a liar, though, Tom. You're a
I'm
liar.
Not.
I mean, that's just the facts, though. And like,
it's not the facts. It's your opinion, which are not facts.
Well, no, it's her opinion, too. She said it.
Okay, dude.
I mean, what you and Ariana had was true love, bro. Do you remember
don't
that
know.
Back in the day?
You don't No,
bro,
man.
You looked me dead in the eyes for years talking about how much you love that girl.
I did love
God,
her.
God, it's like you forget, bro. It's crazy.
Shut up.
No, it's seriously, though. It's
dude,
like
I
you forget your memories, bro.
You
rewrite history in your mind and have fun with your band. I'm not opening for you with the L-Ray because
okay,
I've moved
fine.
On to bigger and better things, okay?
Okay?
This is a joke to me. All right, I gotta go. Bye.
He just can't let go of the past, can he? I'm just waiting for him to, like, get a clue. Or maybe he never will. Like, I could see it now. He's, like, 75, still at the rock and roll bar on Sunset doing karaoke. Like, boom, Dig Flute comes out of the pocket just to play this on national television.
To another episode of Everyone's Business But Mine with me, Kara Berry. Today, Vanderpump Rules and a little dip in the valley. And honestly, I'm thinking the dip in the valley might be a little bit bigger than the dip in Vanderpump Rules. Then again, I do say that every week and, you know, it gets longer and longer that I'm like, I'm only going to be here for 15 minutes and then I'm here for 75. So, you know, we'll just see. We'll go on this journey together. Hold my hand. Let's get into it. We start off with Vanderpump Rules, right? Sheena's reporting live from Kyle Chan's jewelry store. They're going to be shooting the Good as Gold music video 10 years after the song actually came out. I legit cannot believe she hasn't done a music video for this since then. Like, she's had all this time. Whatever. Everybody shows up except for Katie. Katie texted saying, like, I'm sick. I'm on my deathbed. But Sheena thinks that maybe something else is up. And she says in a confessional that she thinks maybe Katie's not showing up. Maybe Katie not showing up has something to do with the fight that she and Lala got into. And I really want to say, like, you guys know that here at Everyone's Business But Mine, at this point in 2024, this is like an anti-Lala's behavior podcast. But even then, I just would like to say that historically, I have liked Lala more than Katie. And even still, I would never say, even in the most like of Lala and the most dislike of Katie, would I think that Lala would be able to get hands on Katie. It just wouldn't happen. I know this is like a Utah versus Utah situation. And I just know Maloney is going to make you ride the pony. And that's it. So the idea that Katie would be, like, faking sick to avoid her, no. But nice try. Sheena is she is like competing for Lala's very best friend. And I just want her to know that like nobody else is competing, girl. You got it. You got it. Anyway, back at James's house, Allie Bally's telling him, come over to my laptop. Somebody did a podcast with she who shall not be named. Frankel. So James is like, you know, I can't believe she's just like going to use these outlets to talk about me and make it seem like I'm this bad dog dad. And I just love, we do not speak this woman's name. And I want to know why. I want to know why they don't want to say Bethany. Is it because like Bravo as a network just doesn't fuck with her anymore? Is it like, I love it. I love it because Bethany is basically like Tinkerbell. Like she literally lives for the applause, and the fact that like they will not speak her name like she's Voldemort, and I know she's been called that several times before, is just like it elicited a giggle from me, I will have to say. Back at the photo shoot, Sheena's like talking, Ariana's there, Lala, not Katie, she's sick, remember? I've been going in since 7 a.m. Like, I haven't seen what's been going on with this podcast, right? I've just gotten some texts. Like, I haven't heard anything. And do we believe that? Do we believe that? I don't think it's possible that between Lala, Sheena, and Ariana, that Ariana was the only one who actually listened to it. Something about that doesn't read correctly to me. But anyway, so Lala's like, well, what did she say? And Sheena says, from what she heard, because she didn't listen to it, that she said that Rachel said that she and Ariana were acquaintances at best. And Ariana says it's funny because our Instagram feeds are filled with pictures of each other. And then we get the flashback from her birthday where Tom, her boyfriend Tom, and her friend Ariana give her those Gucci glasses. And she's talking in a confessional about, these are my very best friends. These are my true core friends. I will be with them forever. And, you know, where are we now? So Ariana says in a confessional, okay, if we weren't that good of friends, it's either Rachel telling herself that so she feels better about what she did, or it's her saying that she basically didn't give a shit about me. You know, honestly, I think it might be both. I think it might be somewhere in between. Honestly, it's becoming more and more apparent to me that the only people who have actually had true friendships are like Katie and Ariana. And I don't want to necessarily exclude Sheena from that, but Sheena's problem is that she wants to be a friend to everybody. And she doesn't care like what that means, or like she just wants everybody to like her and doesn't want them to be mad at her. She doesn't want to have beef with people, which is healthy, but she doesn't do it in a way that's healthy. Like, because why? What is this, honey? You know what I mean? So I think the same thing is true for Rachel. Like, Rachel never knows, she has no concept of what a true friend is. So, like, her saying, these are my true core friends, doesn't really mean anything. Like, it would mean to people who actually enjoy friendships with human beings and have healthy relationships with them. So then Sheena goes on to say that she heard, not directly, but from other people, that Rachel said that she had a savior complex and that their relationship was mutually beneficial because she paid rent at the apartment and bills. But if you guys don't know, so after Rachel and James broke up, she like needed a place to crash, and Sheena and Brock like let her stay at one of her apartments, right? Sheena says she only contributed $1,000 to the $4,300 rent of that place. She didn't pay for parking. She didn't pay for bills. No toilet paper. She had sex in my bed. This toilet paper is a point of contingency for a lot of people on this cast, and I just want to know why. Back to Allie Bally. She is telling James there was no accountability in that podcast. She said she was upset after breaking up with James and how it wasn't over for them. And also that she never really loved Tom, which is funny because that's not what she was saying last summer at the reunion. So James tells Allie Bally, he invited me to the studio space like tomorrow to see the band. He offered me to play an open for him at the El Rey, which is like truly laughable. Like, let's be real. James says in a confessional, I understand Tom has lied to me, and listen, as have I in the past to him, okay? But at the end of the day, I'm trying to figure out our relationship with our friendship. Like, was anything real? What was real? Also, he says, I'm way past opening for him at the El Rey, but it's legendary, so I might just do it anyway. Like, let's be real here. We'll get into that later. Like, it's laughable that Sandoval will be like, hey, bro, you want to open for my band? Like, your cover band? What? Like, let's be honest here. I don't really want to see any of them because I don't really like to see people spinning on the ones and twos. EDM's not my vibe. However, we see Tom in the studio space later rehearsing, and my God today, I would rather hear Kim Zolciak right now scream "The Ring Didn't Mean a Thing" in my ear than ever listen to Tom Sandoval and think that he should be asking anybody to open for him. He should be opening for Kim. So anyway, Allie doesn't want to hear this. She just wanted to kiki about the podcast. She's like, can we talk about something less depressing? Lala's doing a sperm donor party. That's really cool. So then we go back to the Good as Gold video shoot, right? And Lala's asking Ariana, hey, can I use your home that I've been talking shit about and saying that you should move out. It's so stupid. Why doesn't she get the fuck out? Can I use that house for my sperm donor party? Can I? And Ariana says, I don't really know. It's like kind of hot mess right now without Anne. But like, if I move into my new house, you're welcome to get inseminated there if you want. So why can't she shoot at her own house? What's going on there? Because she shoots there. So why is it just like it's too small? So maybe whatever. So then she's like, you know, I want to take the science jargon out of this process of giving a baby or getting pregnant, whatever she calls it. And, you know, I just want the baby to know that it was brought up with so much love and blah, blah, blah. And okay, like, cool, great. I don't disagree. I feel like she's being a little heavy handed with this, but like, not my baby, not my problem. Okay. Like, the kid will know that you love him. You having this performative pin the sperm on the uterus party of Vanderpump Rules is not going to be the like, oh, and see, this is how I showed you I loved you, baby. Like, I don't think so, but whatever. I guess I just feel like having a baby is science, regardless of how it happens. And so, like, love is love. You know what I mean? Just fucking love the kid. It's okay. I guess I'm just like very liberal. Something to me seems like she's having to prove this pregnancy to people and like justify it in a way. And to me, like, don't just have the baby. Maybe there are people who are making her feel that way. Maybe she like has an insecurity within herself, but like, you don't have to sell me on this dream. I don't want to see this party. You know, I'm on board. Congratulations, babe. Congratulations on the baby. And like, if we really want to go there, if you were those kids and you were like the child of Randall, and then this kid that was like intentionally made from a sperm donor, which one would you rather be? Because I have my choice and I imagine you guys all do too. Anyway, Allie Valley tells James that the party's going to be kind of weird because Lala's been venting about Katie. Both of them are just such intense personalities that she really wants them to work it out. So back at Schwartz's, he's rocking a headband for whatever reason. He's sitting on a pallet on the floor while the dogs are on the couch, which honestly seems right. I don't know what's going on with this man, but Sandoval comes over to act like he's so upset, devastated from this podcast because Rachel said she wasn't in love with him. And she's acting like she got the worst out of everybody. So Schwartz is like, well, you both got it bad. But Sandoval says, I've made changes to myself thinking that like, maybe one day she'd see all the hard work I've done for myself and she would appreciate it. And this is all we need to hear about Tom Sandoval. Everything that he does, this like kindness, random acts of kindness, these bombastic, like big, active, actionable things like getting sober, paying for her engagement to somebody else, you know, all these huge things that Tom does is only so that later he can cash in on that. That's all he cares about. It's not like he's not doing it out of the kindness of his heart or like the generosity of his spirit. It's all transactional. He's like, well, I don't get why she doesn't want to. Well, didn't she see what I've done? I am been drinking Heineken Zeros on camera all season for her. Why doesn't she be my girlfriend then? Like, that's all he cares. He doesn't give a shit about her. And now he's fucking pissed. And now he's crying. And he says in a confessional, I wasn't really fully ready to give up hope until I heard it from her own lips. And now I have. And to go through all that and not even give it a shot, like, what was it all for? Like, you tell us, bitch. I don't know. I don't know. This is all you cared about? What was it all for? So then he does the shorts. Yeah, I can't believe she'd think I'd be anybody but, like, somebody who loved and cared about her. Like, I'd do anything for her, man. And Schwartz says, well, regardless of what she says on a podcast, she probably wanted her voice to be heard one last time before she goes on and pursues her new life, whatever that looks like. Like, yeah. And we can find out what she's been doing on Rachel Goes Rogue. Girl, every fucking week. I have not heard of Rachel doing anything not Vanderpump Rules related since this has happened. And up until earlier this week when Tori Spelling said that she saw her somewhere and Rachel, like, she needed some clothes and Rachel offered to give her some clothes because she said she had them in the trunk and then turns out she didn't actually have the clothes in the trunk. All she's done outside of this is, like, trap Tori Spelling into some sort of clothing scam. What else has she done? Anyway, after that, Lisa goes to Tom Tom. Tom's have a new cocktail member, something about brunch. I don't give a fuck about any of this. What happens? Basically, Sandoval is supposed to show up there with Schwartz. He shows up late. We're supposed to be like, he's so out of sorts because of this podcast. And, you know, what she says bullshit. And, you know, this whole scene for Lisa to let him be a little sad boy on camera once again. Like, I'm so over Lisa holding these dudes' dicks. Like, what is this for? He has not done a redemptive thing at all. Like, I want one thing to tether myself to. All he's done this season is, where's Billy Leben? Let Billy Lee follow him around like a lapdog and make sure that he doesn't drown in this plunge pool that he went to, screaming at some man on the floor, yelling at Lisa, yelling at Sheena, yelling at Lala, yelling at Schwartz. He's about to yell at James. He definitely yelled at Ariana and said she couldn't wipe her ass and talk about how he called Lala a sociopath. He has doubled down on the fact that Sheena, you know, took her whole fist, even with those coffin nails, and clocked Rachel in the forehead. He's still saying that. What are we doing? And yet he gets to have scene after scene after scene of, like, us. Oh, how are you feeling now, Tom? We've had one scene of this with Ariana. And this was after they pushed her to the fucking brink and Brock was like, oh, he's allowed to say whatever he wants, mate. You can get his nuts cut off all summer. Get it? Whatever. You know, like, so I don't give a fuck. So Sheena and Brock go over with boxes for Ariana, right? And she's whispering because obviously Tom's upstairs. And she says that while they were at Tom Tom, Logan was there, right? So Logan told her that Tom was thinking about backing out on the deal because her lawyer has responded, right? And that he now might want to sell the house. And she says, this is what I've been wanting to do since March. I could have been gone back then, you know? She says, I wanted to move in March. And he was the one who held back. It's not my fault. It's not my fault. So then she says, honestly, I think what happened is that Tom took a real good look at what it was going to take financially to take over the house. He realized that financially he couldn't do it, which is something that I could have told him from day one. And we wouldn't have been in this mess. And then she says, this is what I've been saying. This is what I, Kara, have been saying all my life. Being right is hard sometimes, especially when I'm always right, when it's always the case. I'm like, that's what I've been screaming every fucking week. I'm like, finally, you get me. It's hard out here. So, on the after show, and I guess during that Tom Tom scene that I skipped over, Tom Sandoval said that because Ariana took 2 months to respond to his, you know, half-assed letter of intent, that his financial situation changed and that he can no longer buy the house, which Susie Orman, take the wheel, because I think she would say, if you're 8 months out, or excuse me, 8 weeks from not being able to buy a house, like if that's all it takes for you to be, for your financial situation to completely change, then you probably shouldn't be buying the house in the first place. And also Ariana says that what had happened was, is that they were like locked into a loan, that loan that he had signed, had her sign into, and like something else. And in order to buy her out of that, he would have had to use the 2023 interest rates and not the 2021 interest rate that they had like signed into when they got the loan initially. So that obviously would have been much higher, and he wouldn't have been able to do it. This is why he's like trying to manipulate Schwartz into going in on this house with him later. So after that, Ariana tells Sheena, you know, I heard what he's going through. And Sheena's like, he doesn't know that there's another part. And then she tells us in a confessional that she's going to be releasing her song Apples, right? And we see a flashback of her singing the lyrics in her house to her mom. Like, she's playing the track under her phone. Her mom's watching Summer Moon. They're sitting on like a beanbag chair. Well, Sheena does her thing. And Erica, her mom's like, okay, girl. And then we're doing this like fucking behind the music scene. And she's telling us in the confessional that originally the song was going to be about Rachel only. But then they made the choice to extend the second verse, as all true musicians do. They added some lines that were kind of directed at Tom. And she's going to be releasing her lyric video on YouTube later that day. So she says, I want to take a traumatic experience and turn it into a nice piece of art. Very therapeutic, very catchy. Of course. So Brock is like, Ariana, what can we do for you? And Sheena says, I know that my mental state can be like, is much better in a cleaner space. Like, this house is, there's a lot going on. Like, what is Craig doing? If Anne was cleaning, see, this is misogyny at work. Why is Anne get to have to clean, and yet Craig's been here for God knows how long, and yet the house looks a shamble? So Sheena's like, what's this table? Can we like at least clean this table, right? And Sheena says in a confessional, listen, I've always known Tom and Ariana's house to be like on the messier side, but if it's getting so bad that Ariana doesn't want to have people over, then it kind of worries me that she might be falling into a dark place. So I don't want to see her space to be a reflection of her mental health. Incredible. But unfortunately, we know what we know now, right? Like, this is true friendship. This is girlhood and Brock. But now, like, why couldn't we have just stayed the course here, Sheena? What happened? What happened? Ariana says, now that I know for a fact that I'm moving, I'm not trying to unpack these bags, these boxes that are coming in. So I'm just trying to, like, keep stuff in the box so I can move, put it on the truck, and I don't have to unpack it again. Like, I'm not trying to move, settle into this house that I know I'm moving out of.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Unfortunately, then we have to go over to rehearsal. This idiot in a dipped out merch shirt doing a one-legged jig all over the studio space is besmirching whatever real musicians were there before him. Honestly, the band, like, sounds pretty decent, but it's so ruined by his, I can't even call it half-assed. Like, he's trying. The problem is that he's trying so hard. And the execution is still horrific. Like, can you try to be in pitch? Can you try to find a song that is in the octave range that actually suits you, Tom? You can't just sing every song that you like. That's not how it works. The man's gonna ruin his vocal cords. And like, whatever. Keep singing. You know what? Keep singing, baby. The smoke. Why did he bring a smoke machine? A fog machine? Why did he, and I know he did, make that camera person film him from the ground up with the fog machine going for the mood? You're at a rehearsal. How much are these band members getting paid? How is it happening? James comes over with Hippie, and Hippie does seem pretty happy to see Sandoval. So James says, you know, Hippie's been the talk of the town today, like talking about the podcast, right? How are you doing, Sandoval? And Sandoval's like, it's been a rough couple days, dude. Like, I can't lie. So James says in a confessional, the part of him does feel bad because he's been there with Rachel doing a podcast about him, and he knows he's been going through things as well, and like, it's been hard for him. And then he goes, you know, Ariana would fucking slap me if I said that too loud. So they go off to the side to talk. So Tom can basically be like, you know, throughout this whole process, like, I've been trying to look out for Rachel. And I just realized that, like, I cared for her way more than she cared about me. So James is like, do you really think that? And Sandoval's like, I fucking know it, dude. Like, listen to the shit that comes out of her mouth. Like, it's fucking bullshit. Like, it's so goddamn disrespectful. She used me. Now she's throwing me away. Dude. What? What? This is crazy. You're unwell. So James, he's out. He tells him, I just want this to be in my past. And then he says, you know, it's like after the breakup, like I tried to move on with my life. And it just seems like all the shit comes back to haunt me. Like, I don't want to sit here and talk about Rachel. I'm done talking shit. Like, I'm done. So Tom's like, look, dude, I didn't even get any closure. And James like, yeah, it's because she's working on herself. And Tom's like, yeah, well, she was working on herself when she broke up with you. And she was so selfish during that time. She was selfish getting involved with me. She was selfish. Getting involved with you. Yeah, I mean, yeah, but not for you. How is he saying this stuff? Him trying to do this bad bitch link up with James as the tortured poets department, Rachel's version, is like so funny to me. Him trying to like get James in on like, yeah, dude, like she made you stop drinking. And I think that's probably because like she thought that you wouldn't be able to do it, dude. So James is like, well, she also said on that podcast that she was never in love with you and that she's actually in love with me and she was never quite over me. So he like taps his shoulders. He's like, you know what? Wouldn't put too much thought into that one, buddy. You know, I actually don't believe you were ever in love. I think it was a fuck fest for 6 months. You would get horny, like extra horny because you weren't getting it for Ariana. So you had to go downstairs and get your willy sucked by Raquel. Why did he even open this vault, Sandoval? This is on you. And there's nothing I can do. And even if there was, I wouldn't. So Tom's like, dude, you don't know what you're talking about. I would go over to the house and we'd spend like 5-6 hours together. Like if we had sex, it would be like just for like a little bit. We would talk the whole rest of the time. So then James pats Tom's shoulders again. He goes, you're a liar though, Tom. You're a liar. That's just the facts. Tom goes, that's not the facts. It's your opinion, which are not facts. And James goes, well, it's her opinion too. She said it. Well, okay, dude. Okay. So James goes, but what you and Ariana had was true love, though, back in the day. Don't you remember? And Tom's like, you don't know that man. And James says, you looked me dead in the eyes for years, telling me how much you fucking love that girl. And Tom's like, well, I did love her. I'm like, okay, well, so he does know. Which one is it, girl? So James is like, it's like you forget, though. Like, it's crazy. And all Tom can say is, shut up. So James is like, you know what? Rewrite history in your mind. Have fun with that. I'm not opening for you at the El Rey because I've moved on to bigger and better things, okay? This is a joke to me. All right? Gotta go. Bye. So James says in a confessional, he just can't let go of the past, can he? Like, I'm waiting on him to get a clue. Maybe he never will. Like, I could see it now. He'll be 75 with a rock and roll bar on Sunset doing karaoke. Like, oh, look, the fucking dick flute comes out and he tells everybody, oh, I used to play this on national television. But it's like, dude, just shut the fuck up. Exactly. So Tom pushes his aloe hat
down on his forehead and goes, why don't you go push some more fucking buttons on your laptop? And James goes, what did you say? And so Tom goes, you hurt me. So James says, say it to my face, bro. And he goes, I said, push the fucking buttons on your fucking laptop. Don't call my band a fucking joke, dude. And James laughs and goes, I will, Sandoval. And after that, what does James do? He heads right out that door into the neon festival at Coachella. So tell me again, Tom, why would James be opening for you? Anyway, after that, we head over to Villa Rosa for Lala's sperm donor party. All I saw food-wise was a big tub of mac and cheese and some chicken skewers, which, honestly, like, I would take. But Lala tells everybody they're going to be playing Pin the Sperm on the Vagina. So Allie asks Katie what happened the other night, because she heard about this fight with Lala and at paintball. And she says, well, it kind of sounds like you're just, like, miserable and you get upset a lot about things, like, very easily, too. And Katie goes, I am? Who said that? And so Allie says, Lala? Katie says, well, I'm definitely not. What I'm tired of is the same dumb shit getting brought up to me over and over again. And then Katie says it in confessional, since when does Lala talk shit behind my back instead of saying it to my face? So she tells Allie, like, I'm chilling, like, I'm good, girl. And then we have Shorts go over to Sandoval's again. And Sandoval is in this front room looking through a telescope. And at first I thought he had some douchey, like, post-workout situation thing strapped to his leg. Maybe he had a knee issue. I don't know. But as I'm looking closer, I'm like, is that a knife? So Schwartz walks in and he goes, you look like a fucking villain over there. You are kind of a villain. And then out pops Craig the assistant, who's basically wearing the same thing as Sandoval, which was incredibly chilling to see. Sandoval says, you know, if anything, the guy could be my stunt double. I'm like, yeah, strap him to the back of JoJo Siwa's shoulders. That's both of you. You get the left one, she gets the right. He gets the right. So then Sandoval reveals, oh, see, I got my leg knife. And then he says, I'm going to work on cutting Maya in half and splitting everything with Ariana. And even though he's joking, it's still like he's telling on himself. Because if we want to go back to the Bible, it's the parable that he's speaking of. There were two mothers in the house, and they both wanted to have claim on King Solomon, right? So they were like, okay, we're going to cut the baby in half, so you guys can both just have half the baby. And so the real mother was like, no, don't cut the baby in half. Whereas the selfish one was like, yeah, let's do it. Get it out. And they were like, oh, well, the true mother would never do that. So, you know, even biblically, this man is fucked up. Then the dumbass says that he's going to start delaying responding to emails so that he can hang out with Maya longer. Okay. So then he says, hey, Schwartz, I got a proposition. And Schwartz is like, please don't say what I think you're going to say. And Schwartz brought some fruit with him. So he keeps, like, shoving the fruit into his mouth while Sandoval's like, how about we be roommates? And he's like, dude, the optics of that are going to be horrible for me. Just say you don't want to do it. Like, honestly, just say you don't want to be this man's friend, because who tells a friend not to be on Sandoval's side? But, like, let's look at this objectively. Who would tell somebody? Like, would you want your friend to be like, my association with you looks horrible for me, for the outside? Like, why would you want to hang out with that person? This is Sandoval's best case scenario, is that the closest person to him in his whole life, out of his friends at least, I don't know what his mom is doing, but this is the closest person who's on national television being like, I can't get any closer to you because it makes my life worse. So I ask you, why are either of you guys friends? But whatever, that's your problem. He even says, somebody's going to make a voodoo doll out of both of us and stick needles in them. And Sandoval goes, they already done that. Maya's ears are pushed so back. I've got a whole folder of Maya the dog reactions in my phone now, because every time she's with Schwartz and Sandoval, those ears could not go further. Like, I'm not having it. I don't love this, what I'm hearing. And at this point, if it hadn't been bullshit to everybody before, Sandoval's whole defense about Ariana being irresponsible falls right apart. Because Schwartz says, if I were to even entertain this, like, how much would rent be? And Sandoval says $6,000. And he goes, not a chance in hell. So Sandoval's like, well, you already paid, you're paying $4,500 in rent. And Schwartz says, yeah, but ethically, I'm not paying $6,000 for something that I'm not even getting equity in. So then Sandoval's basically like, well, how about we get a loan? And Schwartz is like, oh, no, I don't like that. They would look at us like two nincompoops.
No, no, they wouldn't.
Yes, they would. Yes, they would. Susie Orman, please DM this boy. Or not. So then Schwartz asks, oh, well, are the girls at the sperm donor party right now? And Sandoval's like, yeah, they're at Juice Fest. And Schwartz is like, don't call it that. So back at Juice Fest, Lala's crying about how she's, you know, such a good mom. This is her introduction to the pin the sperm on the vagina game. Lisa says in a confessional, for goodness sake, I had a blindfold on. How am I supposed to know where the vagina is? I can barely find my own. Sheena's basically the only one who gets it pretty close to, you know, Grand Central. And she's like, and that's how Summer was made. Cool. Katie goes even higher than Sheena. And Lala, now, like, her mama's there and there are some other adults her mother's age. Lala says, well, you know how much we love a tummy shot. That made me gag on so many levels. Like, do you know how horny you have to be to out-horn this girl? To make me want to be like, that's inappropriate. Never in my life would I talk about a tummy shot in front of my mother. Kill me. I'd sooner be dead, okay? And also, since I thought about it, y'all have to think about it too. The person, she's like, if we really want to break it down, she's talking about Randall. You think about Randall taking tummy shots to Lala. Ugh. Yuck. I'm so sorry. And yet, if I had to go down that road, you'd do. We got to move on, y'all. Blah, blah, blah. They pick donor number one because he seems nice and he likes the Fleet Foxes song. I don't know. Lisa wanted to pick number two solely based on the fact that he likes dogs. Lisa, grow up. So Allie tells James afterwards that the event was beautiful, but her issue with the thing was that she couldn't read any of the birth charts. So that was like pretty frustrating to her. And she says in a confessional, I want to know your high school GPA and I want to know your sun sign, which I actually find quite interesting because as I'm doing research into the astro world myself, the girlies are saying that what you really should be looking at is your rising sign, not your sun. So like I'm a Pisces sun, but I'm a Capricorn rising. And honestly, things are adding up for me. Anyway, so this leads to Allie, Bally, and James having a conversation about their future. Allie says that she's never really had any kind of maternal instinct, that like she's been talking to her girlfriends about babies and how they've been born to be mothers and they're doing Pinterest boards about it, but she's never really felt that. Like, she feels it for cats and dogs but not for humans. And like, yeah, I get you, girl. And then James kind of like gets very emotional, and this is the parts of James that make me feel empathy for him, because he's such a broken little boy who needs love, craves love, wants that connection, whatever, right? But I also understand being at a point where you're like, okay, I came out of this like 5-year relationship. I'm a year and a half into my relationship with you. You're telling me now that like kids are not really a thing, but that's really what I saw in my future. I do think it's a little strange that they had not talked about this before, but whatever. And I, in that sense, I do think it's kind of unfair to Allie, because like, why are you crying? Like, if you wanted this so badly, then I feel like at some point before a year and a half, this would have come up. But anyway, but I do understand when he's saying, I'm a year and a half into my relationship and I don't want to be in another 5-year relationship and everything blow up and I have to start all over again. Like, I get it. Like, I wouldn't want to do that either. Then he says, basically, like, I don't know. Allie says that I feel a future with you. I wouldn't be here if I wasn't, right? If I didn't. So everybody shows up to, okay, they're at Pump, but it's a Tom Tom brunch. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. Sandoval shows up in another Barbara Bush Sr. Easter Sunday power suit. I don't know what he's doing with this, but okay. James bumps knuckles with him, and he's like, oh, sorry about other night, Mike. And we find out that, like, you know, Allie talked him into being a good boy or something. He's like, I just don't want to carry that on or whatever. So he's going to be DJing for the brunch. the ladies sit down for food. Honestly, this is the first time in Vanderpump Rules history that the food being served actually looked the fuck good. I'm like, I want that. I want that skirt steak. Like, and it must have been bussing because Ariana was having herself a good old time. Like, I don't even know if she knows that she was there. That would have been me. Like, you got a medium rare steak in front of me for free? I don't care where I am, okay? Katie and Lala are going back and forth about how Allie had told Katie that Lala had called her miserable. So Lala's looking at Allie and is like, is that what I said? Did I call her miserable? She's like, I think so. Sheena's backing her up, Lala. She's like, she definitely didn't say that. We do see a flashback where Lala says she's so unhappy. Katie's so unhappy. She has been for a long time. To be sort of fair to Allie, I don't think miserable is that far of a leap, but I do think miserable is like, it's a word that like, you got to say it. You know, like if they said it, if they didn't say it, you can't say that that's what they said. You know what I mean? Because that's deep. So anyway, Allie's like, you know, I was just trying to remember the word she used. And Sheena's like, she didn't say that. She didn't say that. Anyway, again, Sheena, the only one competing is you. That's why you don't have to compete. Just chill. So Lala tells Katie, I was going to have a conversation with you because I feel like maybe you're not in a happy place right now. And Katie says, you're wrong. So Lala says, well, I want to know that I don't trigger you because when you said that, you know, like you don't feel like I'm loyal or consistent. Katie's like, it's not that I don't feel that you're loyal or consistent. It's just that I feel like this softness thing is not going to the most deserving people. And I feel like you're more defensive with me now lately. So Lala says, well, I think it's because we were more inseparable last year and friends go through things and life changes. And like you and Ariana are very close and I don't really know where my place is with you. Ariana's still chewing. So all she can do is just reach out a hand to Lala and like hold her and be like, that's not true. I'm guessing what she's trying to say is like, that's not true. Katie's looking very confused. Like, I don't know what the hell she's talking about. Ariana, she's swallowed now and is like, can we just have a night where we all lay in one big bed and do nothing? So Katie says, I don't think this is a situation of like, you're close to this person, so you don't know where your place is in my life. Like, I don't have a person. I don't have a boyfriend. I don't have a kid. I don't have anything. I've got all the time in the world. So don't feel like I don't have time for you. Like, that makes me feel sad. So Sheena, as Lala's best friend, is like, well, something that I've learned in my relationship and getting closer with Lala is that she needs a friendship, in a friendship, like somebody who checks in on her. And Katie's like, I do all the time. I text her. I call her. The reason why we're not close is because you don't have a single moment to hang out, Lala. And then Katie says in a confessional, I would love to have Lala as a close friend in my life always, but it goes both ways. It's an effort, not an obligation. So Lala tells her everything you're saying is correct. So what are you mad about then? Why are we talking then? She's like, I don't take a lot of time with you, but I need you to know that I love you for exactly the person you are. What? Why are you mad at me? If you're saying you don't, it's absolutely true that I don't make time for you, but like we need to do this both ways. Okay. But she's saying I'm the one putting the effort and you're not denying that. You're actually saying it's true. So why are you crying? What's going on here? And this like really is what irks me about Lala. She did this in episode one of the season with Ariana, like, I don't know if you like me anymore. And Ariana's like, where is this even coming from? Here's the list of work and effort that I've made towards being your friend. And then Lala has to be like, oh, yeah, you're right. Well, I just wanted to get back to where we were. It's like, I wasn't going anywhere. You're the one who took the U-turn, girl. U-turn around. So I just feel like Lala, like I said before, doesn't know how to really be a friend to anybody. So when it gets too close and it gets like too intimate, she's like pulls back in this very weird way. And it's now your fault, even though she's the one who's pulled back. And then she uses that as a reason to like go towards people that you don't like and make it seem like you're the problem. And she's in her soft girl era and she just wants peace and love and light and everybody to be getting along with each other. But it's like, none of this makes sense with what you're saying. You're the problem. And the biggest oopsie of all is going to happen with Sheena, I'm telling you now, because Sheena's being so invested in her, partially because of true friendship that she thinks on her end only, and probably mostly because now the ship is sinking with her, and she don't have as many friends as she wants. You know, like, you know, obviously things are not going well with her and Ariana, and who knows what else, right? So she's got all of her chips in a basket with Lala, and it's giving, let's talk about another parable, the scorpion and the turtle. Lala is a scorpion, and Sheena's like, we need to cross this together, and Lala's saying, I'm going to sting you, and Sheena's like, let's do it anyway, and she stings her, and she's going to drown, and she's like, why did you do that? She's like, I told you. Okay. Anyway, Sandoval and his power suit are trying to keep pushing Tom on a house. He's like, oh, you know, I got my guy on looking at some other house, but like, no big deal, no pressure, right? So then he starts talking shit about Ariana again, but then Sheena walks up, so he's like, oh, shh, right? Sheena's like, how are you? The last 3 days have been tough, huh? And he's like, yeah, I'm feeling very betrayed and hurt. Like, I'm not getting any closure, no email. And Sheena's like, well, none of us are. So I wrote a song about it. It came out yesterday. Both of them are like, yeah, we haven't heard it. And so Sheena explains, well, there are a couple of specific lines. And Sandoval goes, are they about our affair? And Sheena goes, open to interpretation. There is one line that says, from a Ferrari to a Jetta, thought that you knew better. Like, you went for something good to bad, you know? Like, you could do better. So Short says, well, that could be anybody. But in a confessional, he goes, yeah, it could be open to interpretation, except for the fact that Rachel literally drives a Jetta. So Sheena tells Sandoval, you're not going to be able to hate it. And he's like, I think I'll feel differently.
He's like, if you went through what I went through, and I was writing a song about you? Oh, but that's okay, that's fine.
So he gets up, and he walks away, and Sheena tells Schwartz, well, I've already heard the song. I just love that in her world, like, she doesn't care that she upset him. She's upset that he didn't listen, give her a stream on YouTube. He didn't open up YouTube to get that lyrics video. I thought you already saw this.
So Sandoval says in a confessional, I feel like Sheena and I have come a long way and we were starting to become friends again. And then it's like, go profit from my fame. It's just like, Tom's going to be collateral damage in this. I don't give a shit. I got to put a track out. And she was really caring about like mending things. Like she wouldn't have like done this. Like, so like
he walks out. But on the way, he mumbles,
keep cashing in on my misery.
I'd love to. I am. Okay, let's go to the valley.
It is so hard to be an empath.
Five. Suck it in.
This is to lube it up before we shove it up his ass.
No lube, not even spit.
I want to fix everyone's problems.
I'm going to knock his ass out.
I want to involve myself because I just think that I can.
Stop interrupting.
Because I am a good person.
All right, you guys, are you ready to take a dip in the valley? Because I sure am. And I'm ready to, much like Tom's ugly t-shirt, ready to dip back out. So we start off with Queen Nia using her Miss USA royalty connections to have a fun girls' trip out to Malibu for the day. Jax is at home pulling a Sandoval, right? Brittany is so excited to have a little girl's day, get a little tipsy. She is chuckling all over that modern farmhouse. And Jax is just being horrible. Blaming Brittany for not cleaning up around the house. And that's why he gets to be a monster to all of his neighbors and use that leaf blower multiple times a day. Now, you're saying that you use it multiple times a day, and yet it seems like you haven't used it in weeks, but whatever. Then he uses this to shame Brittany because she's like, oh, I hope I don't forget my bottle of tequila. And he's like, oh, yeah, God forbid you forget the tequila. So Brittany says in a confessional, like, I try to be upbeat, but, you know, sometimes he just gets me down. On the ride there, Janet's driving, huffing on some, cheese curls. I don't know what they were, cheese doodles. God bless her. But on the ride there, Jax sends this, like, performative, I'm a good husband text, like, oh, go have fun, drink as much as you want, I'll be home, you know, to not rub this in your face later. And Brittany's like, you know, guys are so hypocritical, they have double standards, and, you know, how the other day,
Jax gets to do whatever the fuck he wants. Like, he drinks all the time. He drinks to excess. He gets to be hungover. But the other day, she wasn't feeling well, and he made it worse. Y'all, this flashback from 9 days ago, like, I know what I'm looking at when I'm looking at Jax Taylor, but even for that, pretty fucking bad. Like, so they're in the backyard having a little pool day with little Cruz, and Brittany's like hungover, and she's like, you know, Jax, don't be nice to me, whatever. And Jax is like, enough, you know better, enough, stop drinking. And then they go back in the house, and there's like a faraway shot of Jax saying to her, holding Cruz, saying, if you want to have more kids, act like a mom. Get the fuck ASAP. I would have caught a charge. Because one thing about me, like, I have been in some dumb relationships, but I'll tell you, I have not one tolerance. Not one man has called me a bitch. Never once. And I've been one. Never once will that happen. I tell you what. I just, like, have no tolerance. That is one thing that I do not accept, is, like, talking poorly and, like, I'm stupid. Or, like, you're better than me. Or just, like disrespectfully at all. Like, I will end you right now. I don't care. Like, again, it's never happened to me. I just feel like if it does, I'm going to be very upset about it. I'm not preparing myself because it's not going to happen. But, like, the fact that this is her life and he's saying it on camera, what is he saying, you know? And honestly, I guess I do have to take back what I said before the season when I was like, oh, we're going to watch these two, Jax and Brittany, have this, like, perfectly fine relationship and then break up. And then they're going to be like, oh, you're going to have to see what happens. And it's not going to be anything. Oh, it's actually everything. So, you know, hate that for all of us. Janet says it in confessional. Yeah, like, Brittany does get lit. I am kind of concerned about that. But on the other hand, she's married to Jax Taylor. And you think that this is dead air on my end? It's not. It's me imitating Janet looking at the camera after she says she's married to Jax Taylor. Because, yeah, it's like, you know what I mean? And it's like, yeah, we all know what that means, Janet. I get it. Anyway, Brittany shows up to this girl's party. And she's walking around like, oh, I don't feel good. I may be pregnant. She and Luke just had their romantic evening. Like, how many hours ago? The man has, she's got fresh nut in her, respectfully. And she's like, you know, Luke says I might be pregnant, but, like, she's acting like, oh, isn't that crazy, guys? Like, we just had sex. But then she says in the confessional, like, maybe. Could be. Michelle Lally says in a confessional, please don't have a kid. We don't need more of you. Oh. Ding dong. So the ladies sit down for some sort of, I don't know, this was like very LA to me, painting project where they all say what their intentions are. And this turns into a passive aggressive festival in the best way. Like, Michelle uses this way to be like, you know, my intention, my word is that I want to lead with love.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
And then she's like staring daggers at Kristen. Like, clearly she hates Kristen. So you're not leading with love. You're leading with pettiness and like, thank you. Kristen says, you know, I want to have peace for the day. Which is what she tries to lead with, because she can't help but feel everyone's in the room's feelings and take that home with her. And then the editors choose to do the funniest fucking thing on the planet when they have Kristen in a confessional saying, like, with no irony whatsoever, it's so hard for me to be an empath. And then they show all the footage of her on Vanderpump Rules. Suck a dick, Diana. Ariana, do you want to shove a dildo up Sandoval's ass? All the greatest hits. We love them. Falling out of that chair backwards. God bless her. For once, Brittany is sitting in a confessional, absolutely speechless. Couldn't even chuckle. Couldn't even let out a, I don't know what she's talking about, chuckle. Nothing. Got nothing. And then, like, the problem with this show is that we have everybody else, and then we've got 3 Under 2 and Queen Nia, who are having, like, very real issues. So while Kristen and Michelle are trying not to kill each other because both of them are racist and they don't want to admit it, and now we said it, Queen Nia is like, you guys, I'm having like some serious postpartum depression and it's hard and I'm really struggling because there's a separation between my emotions that are telling me you should be sad and my mind that is telling me that everything's fine. And I'm sorry, who the fuck is this producer? Because if this were me, I would be very offended. Maybe I shouldn't be, but like, tell me, because I would feel some type of way about this. It was a dude, by the way, I'm assuming. But the producer says, are your emotions, like, is it a reaction to having children? Like the family and the love? Like, is it a completely adverse reaction to all that? Like, he's asking her, are you, like, reacting negatively towards this beautiful life that you have? Well, I hated that question, but thank God for 3 Under 2 later when she is telling him what she's going through and how she thinks that it might be time to have therapy. He's, like, very supportive and be like, yeah, absolutely. Like, there's no shame in that, by the way. Like, do what you gotta do. After that, there's a guys' night. They have their own pool day back in the valley. 3 Under 2 can't come because the AC's broken and, you know, he's got 3 Under 2. So Jesse tells the guys, look at Isabella and look at how she is when she's with me compared to how she is with her mom. She's like bouncing off the walls. Like, if you don't want to watch, and why would you? Isabella's behaving very nicely and independently. I mean, granted, everything that Jesse says is a big, ooh, I don't think you need to tell your friends that. But again, thank you for this, because then we hear like a he said, she said, because Brittany takes Michelle into a little room in this Malibu house to be like, how are you and Jesse doing? So Jesse tells the guys in the pool that a year ago, oh, sorry. First of all, they talk about the therapy and he says, basically, therapy is really awful because things keep happening during the sessions, like, you know, Michelle complaining about him and like asking him to be better or whatever. But then he tells them that a year ago, Michelle told him that she got an apartment and she was thinking about moving out. And he says in a confessional, like, I was blindsided by that, but we talked it out. It was like a 2-day thing and we decided to give things a second chance. So Michelle's telling Brittany that Jesse will have patches of trying, putting in effort, but basically she's more unhappy than she is happy. And so Brittany's like, well, how long have you been feeling that way? And she says, well, so during COVID, Jesse was really hands-on. And then, like, the things lifted, and now he's, like, out here in these streets, right? She does see him trying now, but she's getting that feeling like she did last year. Like, I'm trying to get out of here, right? So back at pool day with the boys, we find out that Michelle met this famous director at the Chateau Marmont. Lest we not forget, right down the street from their coveted home, not in the valley. Okay? And that Michelle's been hanging out with this guy, having dinners with him like multiple nights in a row, hanging out with famous actors, having dinners, blah, blah, blah. All the guys are like, what the hell's going on here? Like, I would be very unhappy if my wife was doing that. But Jesse's like totally cool. Guy like, you, she's doing what she's doing. I trust her completely. She knows to make the right decisions. If she cheats on me, that's her choice. And then he tells him, you know, if she does, I get to tell our daughter for the next 40 years that mommy fucked up. Okay. Okay. So then their guys are like, okay, well, what did you say? Like, do you feel some type of way about that? And he's like, no, I told her, like, put your skirt down, take your blouse off or whatever to get a client for his real estate agency. Also, this director's name is blurred. We've all been trying to figure it out. My biggest guess is Tarantino, because I was looking at what, God, there are too many J's. Janet and Jason? Is that his name? Janet's husband? Jason? I think. Jason said what looked the most like Tarantino to me. Like, it didn't look like he was saying a full name. Like, it looked like he was just saying a one name person. It was just announced, like, literally yesterday that Quentin had scrapped whatever project he's working on because he's going to do something new now. And listen, if the storyline is about some douchebag who lives down by the Chateau Marmont and, like, the, you know, half Persian, half Mexican woman that hates him, open-toed shoes, then, you know, we got our answer. We got our answer. So, yeah, like, he's playing it totally cool. All the guys are seeing right through Jesse being very cool about this, right? We'll see. More on that later. So Luke has been sitting there in the hot tub, minding his own business, not psych. Because in a confessional, Luke says, you know, I know Michelle and Jesse's relationship isn't the best, but I'm also holding a secret that could end everything. So obviously the producer's like, what are you talking about, girl? And he's like, oh, I don't know. Like, I don't even know how to talk about this. And we never hear anything. So back to the ladies. They're playing Jenga, truth or dare, Jenga. I don't know. And there is such a difference between Brittany and her relationship with Jax and Michelle and her relationship with Jesse. Both of them are shot to shit, make no mistake. Speaking of shit, this is actually apropos, because Brittany talks about, they ask her what her most embarrassing moment was, and she tells a story about how the first time she met Jax's parents, they went down to Florida. They went her on a boat, and they were looking at all the stingrays in the water. Her stomach started rumbling, so she had to go into the water and, you know, make it happen. And she made Jax stay like 3 feet away from her just in case she got stung by a stingray, right? So she's like, to this day, I don't know if his parents know that. I guess they do now. So then Michelle says, by contrast, she, like, if they're at a hotel, will go down to the lobby to go to the bathroom and doesn't even, she won't even be like, poop. She says, number two. Get out of this relationship, girl. So Brittany tells all the girls, they were like, when was the last time y'all had sex? And Brittany tells all the girls that basically she and Jax don't fuck. It's been 6 weeks, which, girl math, shout out to Paige DeSorbo. It's very obviously been longer than that. And she's like, well, Jax really doesn't make me feel attractive or wanted at all. I'm going to cry. Brittany. So then we see her back at home. She's hungover, or she said she was hungover earlier, but she's fine now. Jack shames her again about her drinking and how he's like, well, what I did is, like, I did this and I was hanging out with my boy and we were just at home and we were sitting very quietly and playing Rummy Coop or whatever the fuck and Catan. And, you know, I went to bed at 12 and she goes, I went to bed at 11:30, and he just stares at her. He also says that he found a bag of puke in the driveway. I mean, listen, Brittany does maybe want to consider tamping down on the drinking, because if we remember her last season on Vanderpump Rules, she had like an ulcer and they were telling her stop drinking. So Jax is like, what did you tell them about our sex life? Because he knows. She's like, oh, well, I told him that we hadn't had sex in 6 weeks. And, you know, you would at least try a little bit and make me feel sexy or something, Jax. And he's like, he's yawning.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, for sure.
So then he says in a confessional, like, his sob story about how, you know, he's been in the trenches where the phone hasn't rang wrong and he hasn't had anything. And now he's got so much going on, he doesn't have time for anything. And they're just like, he can't find a balance, basically. And that's why he's not fucking Brittany. Okay. So then they're like, but we're never going to get divorced, right? And he's like, yeah, the D word doesn't exist for us. She's like, yeah, we're like best friends. We're like thick as thieves, Jax. I'm like, oh. Oh, okay. Let's... How'd that work out? How did that work out for you guys? If you guys want to find out how that worked out, go to the cover of Us Magazine, I think, this month. Or so at the end of the episode, Michelle tells Jesse what she told the ladies. And he was like, oh, well, do you want to make this work or not? Because, like, we're spending all this time and money on the therapist. But then he manages to work up a tear and be like, I really want to do this as a team. And she's like, okay, well, I'll try, but no promises. And then I'm a little bit confused as to why Michelle is confused as to why they are where they are. Because she's like, I thought we'd be together forever. When literally last week you were like, this is the longest one night stand ever. And I knew when I saw this man when we went on our first date that he was a douchebag and I should not be married to him and that he is not my husband. So where's the shock? I'm just asking the questions here. With that, you guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank me for speaking. Love you. Bye.